And Jack and I were both so disappointed, as well as other people on the lawsuit. I've always personally felt the State Department was an extension of myself and a place that I could go for help. And I don't know exactly why they're doing this. And I'm very disappointed. I think they're sending the wrong message out to Saddam and other terrorist groups and terrorist countries that they're not even supporting their own citizens who have been victims of terrorism. I'm hoping with all my heart that they will change their tactics on this and find it in their hearts to support us.
You know, it should point out to people, your medical bills, obviously because of Jack's condition, which was a direct result of this whole action that started this whole war on terrorism, that was the justification for Desert Storm, if you recall, and all of the other operations since then. Your medical bills are sort of piling up here, or they're going to at some point or another, and you could darn well use that money right now, it would seem like. And the State Department is saying, no, we're not going to let you collect that. And you don't want the whole puddle. You just want a little. How much are you asking for, or how much was awarded?
Jack was awarded $1.78 million, which is the largest award of any of the hostages.
Out of how big a puddle?
Well, Saddam's holdings are over $2 billion in the United States.
Yeah, I mean, so we're talking about a fraction here.
Oh, yes. It would, even with everybody included, would just be a fraction of the money that's frozen in the assets here.
All right. Well, okay, so basically the State Department has once again sort of shown some colors that don't seem to be too patriotic. However, what about Bechtel Corporation? I mean, it would seem like he was on the job for Bechtel. This would be a workman's comp issue, it would seem like. You could have some claim under that.
We do have a claim under that ongoing, and we are making some progress. We're not quite there yet, but we are closer, and I'd rather not talk about any figures, but it's a very small amount that Jack is asking for compensation, just really to help with our present medical bills. Our medical bills at one time were over $260,000 in 1 year. We have insurance, but when there's another 20% tacked on all the time,
yeah. And
now they are just way out of control. He's just developed so many things. He's had a quadruple bypass. He lost a kidney to cancer after he was over there. He actually went, after he was a hostage, he went back into Kuwait, and he brought in equipment to put out the oil well fires, and probably wasn't the best atmosphere for him to work in with all the smoke. But he's just had one problem. When you have diabetes, it just kind of blows up into other problems, and he's had about every one you can imagine.
Sure.
And his poor body, his mind is okay, but his poor body, he's a 6'6" proud man that's worked all over in the Mideast and he's been a Marine, and now his mind is fine, but his body is just willing away to nothing. So it's very difficult for me to sit and watch him, probably just watch him die. And I do hope that something happens on the Iraqi lawsuit, just so he'll have a little bit of peace of mind. He feels like a forgotten, lost man out there.
I understand Bechtel is fighting, though, the workman's comp claim.
They have been fighting it. We did receive something from the judge, but they have another month to appeal. So we'll just have to wait for another month and see what happens.
Yeah, but in this case, the clock is sort of ticking, though.
It's definitely ticking.
Yeah.
It's ticking, and our bills mount up just out of control.
So the U.S. government won't allow you to collect money, even though it was approved under legislation. The company is fighting.
Well, good evening, Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But we ask that you hold your calls for the time being because we have with us tonight Dr. Russell Blaylock. And we've had Dr. Blaylock on many, many times before. First of all, talking about his initial book. It had to do with excitotoxins, the taste that kills. Going into the real background of aspartame, MSG, other cytotoxins, and their toxic effect on the brain. And, of course, they never should have been licensed for general consumption. But, of course, they had a scam. They outlawed saccharin. They fed some cats 6,000 times the normal dose to cats that had a predilection for cancer. Do you know what happened? Why some of them developed cancer. Well, under any circumstances, we then, had to have something, a sweetener, and so they licensed aspartame. Of course, very soon afterwards, they allowed, of course, the other product to be put back on the market. But in the meantime, aspartame came to be accepted, widely used, and, of course, Dr. Blaylock's book on excitotoxin, The Taste That Kills, certainly pointed out that it really isn't safe, and went into great detail on the toxic effects because Dr. Blaylock is a neurosurgeon, and of course he understands certainly a great deal about brains. Well, he is retired from neurosurgery. He's taken up doing nutritional practice, and he's written another exciting book called Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. And you really need to understand what he's talking about. You need to get this book. Because, of course, most people don't understand that so much of what we do creates disease. And if you eat properly and take good care of yourself, why, you can live a good, long, and healthy life. But there are so many toxic substances out there, and many of them, of course, actively encouraged by your own government. And, of course, Dr. Blaylock has done extensive scientific work. You go through his book. He's got well over 500, 600 different references here, pretty close to 600 different scientific studies to back up what he has to say. But you're not getting most of this information from the regular sources, and you'll be fascinated by the material you'll find in Dr. Russell Blaylock's book, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. Dr. Blaylock, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you, Stan. I appreciate it.
Well, it's always good to have you with us. And we're going to actually be talking for a good long while this evening. We're going to do a two-hour marathon. The people up in Washington will hear the first hour. So let's just start right here at the very beginning. I know that you've always been very concerned about the various substances that are toxic to the brain, because if you destroy the brain, well, you destroy the very essence of the individual. And, of course, that's how you got interested, I think, through your book on excitotoxins. Where shall we start? Shall we start with the good nutrition? Shall we start with fluoride, mercury, lead? Where shall we start? Or should we just sort of go through the book chapter by chapter?
Well, let's start with the basic thesis of the book is that there's a central mechanism for the cause of many of the degenerative diseases we associate both with youth and particularly aging, for instance, diabetes, hypertension, heart disease, arteriosclerosis, cancer. All these diseases, even though they're wide and varied and seem to be so different, when we look at the molecular mechanism on a cellular level, they basically have the same mechanism that's bringing this thing about. And that mechanism is the destruction and damage of the cell itself by free radicals. Now, free radicals, basically what they are, they're very reactive elements within the cell that damage the parts of the cell through a process called oxidation. So then when these little particles hit the DNA, they oxidize the different nucleotides in the DNA, or when they hit the mitochondrion that produces the energy for the cell, it damages its ability to produce energy. So these particles are being produced mainly by metabolism all through our life, and we have a very elaborate system to protect ourselves against that oxidation process. But for various reasons, either because of your genetics or your poor nutrition or because of aging, this process of protection can break down, and then these diseases develop. Which disease develops depends on which cells are mainly affected by these free radicals. So that's the introductory part of the book, is discussing how all these diseases are interrelated. To give you an example, for instance, we know with diabetes, which is epidemic at this point, we see that as soon as people start developing the disease, the number of free radicals in their body begin to go up substantially. As they develop complications from the disease, the number of free radicals just explodes exponentially. And then at that point, the diabetic begins to develop a lot of other diseases. They frequently develop hypertension, they develop advanced arteriosclerosis, cataracts, heart disease. All of these other diseases that seem somehow they unrelated, once we understand that these free radicals can produce all these diseases, we see why diabetics are so prone to develop all of these things. We also see there's a correlation between heart disease and Alzheimer's disease, that people that develop Alzheimer's frequently have cardiovascular disease as well. And that's because both diseases are caused by the same process. So once we understand that, then we can look at the different other chapters in the book, which are primarily looking at things like the toxic metals, fluoride, arsenic, lead, aluminum, mercury. These different toxic elements also produce an enormous increase in free radical production. And one of the areas that they produce a lot of this free radical production, of course, is in the brain. And that's one of my major concerns, because, as you said, that's the essence of your existence, is your brain. So if you want to, we can start with at that point, with the first toxic metal I talked about, which was mercury poisoning.
All right. Well, before you would do that, the free radicals are basically their atoms, and they have a couple of extra electrons on them, and as a result of the oxidation process, and because they have those extra electrons on them, they can begin to join with other things and really begin to produce harm in the cells, unless they can be neutralized. Isn't that pretty well it?
Well, actually, they're electron deficient in their outer orbits. And because of this deficiency, they start stealing electrons from other atoms.
Okay.
And that's the oxidation process. That's what makes them so reactive. They're so hungry for these electrons, they just interact with everything in the cell.
All right, fine. And so basically it's just the presence of the free radicals that begins to get us into problems. And, of course, the question then is, how do we protect ourselves against this process? Now, let's get started then with the mercury. Certainly, there's been a lot of talk recently about the mercury that the government has, at least the vaccine manufacturer, were putting into the vaccines we're giving to our children in the nursery. And, of course, every parent was told, oh, you love your children, you got to give them hepatitis B vaccine in the nursery. And, of course, we've always had this thimerosal, the mercury compound in the vaccines. It's been there, I guess, going back to the 30s or 40s. But only when the government was insisting on children taking so many vaccines with so much mercury that finally the opponents of vaccines point this out and say, this is wrong, it's absolutely wrong, you're poisoning our children. And did the other side deny that? No, they said, oh, well, then we'll just take the thimerosal out. I mean, if it was safe, why didn't they bring up the evidence it was safe? And if it wasn't safe, why did they give to countless millions of our children? What does mercury do to the brain of a child?
Well, mercury is one of the most poisonous of the metals that we deal with. What it does primarily in the cell is just absolutely numerous toxic events. One is it produces an enormous number of free radicals, but it also poisons what we call protein synthesis, or the ability of the cell to produce proteins, which is vital, particularly the formation of the brain of a child. Because as a child's brain is forming during the last trimester of the pregnancy and the first 2 years of life is what we call the brain growth spurt, and that's when the brain is doing most of its growing. But we know by age 4, a child's brain is only 80% completed, and by age 8, it's only 90% completed. So there's a lot of brain growth going on through this child's early life. And this protein synthesis is the part where the brain is beginning to form. It's very dependent on that. So that mercury poisons that protein synthesis. We also know that mercury tends to react very aggressively with DNA, so that it poisons the DNA, which also has a lot to do with the protein synthesis as well as the other things in which the brain is making its very fine connections. We know that the mercury poisons many of the antioxidant enzymes themselves. For instance, a lot of enzymes your cells have that protect the cell against these free radicals. But unfortunately, the mercury not only increases the free radicals, but it poisons the protective enzymes that are the antioxidant defense. So you have a compounding of that free radical damage in these small children. Now, with all of these free radicals in the brain at that stage, when it's undergoing all of this formation, does is it destroys the little tiny connections that are starting to form as quickly as they can form. And so basically what happens is the brain becomes miswired. Now, what we see in a child who has a miswired brain is they develop either attention deficit disorder, deficit disorder, or autism, or one of the autism spectrum disorders. So the amount of damage can vary from very mild to very severe, depending on the intensity of this free radical damage and the amount of mercury that accumulates. Now, one of the bad things about mercury is that it's fat soluble, and the brain is composed of 60% fat, so mercury tends to accumulate in the brain in higher concentrations than any other part of the body. In fact, the brain concentration is about 10 times higher than the blood concentration of mercury. And the other problem with the mercury, once it gets in the brain, it's very difficult to get it out. So that even if you do different procedures to remove the mercury from the rest of the body, it takes a very long time to remove the mercury from the brain itself.
But it's doing irreversible damage in the growing child's brain, isn't it?
That's correct. So the whole time that it's there, those decades that it's sitting in the brain from the time of early brain formation until the child becomes a teenager, the brain is undergoing tremendous damage. We also know that as you get older, this mercury in your brain is very damaging because the brain cell becomes weaker as we age. It's less able to neutralize these free radicals, so that the elderly are also at a severe risk of this mercury damage. And, of course, with the insane policy of telling the elderly they need to get flu shots, which still has thimerosal in it, they did not take it out of the flu shot. Every time they take a flu shot, they're getting a dose of mercury. That is accumulative. That is, once they get that vaccine, it enters the brain, it stays there. The next year, they get another vaccine, and more of it enters the brain. So they do it 3 or 4 years. They have a very high level of brain mercury. And we know that mercury elevation in the brain is associated with most of the degenerative brain disorders like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's and Lou Gehrig disease. That's been very well demonstrated in these disorders. So we see that it's not just the developing brain of the child, but also everyone's brain, particularly the child and the elderly person, is going to be the most severely damaged by this.
Well, now we're hearing a lot in the media about it. Oh, you know, there's mercury in the fish, and pregnant women shouldn't eat fish because, of course, there's a slight trace of mercury in that, and we are here from the government, and we want to protect the child, but now they're going to have to take these flu vaccinations, they're going to have to take the hepatitis B vaccine and the MMR and all these vaccines. You know, they get about 25 to 30 vaccines by the time they're 4 or 5 years of age, and so many of them containing the thimerosal. Now, the government has a wonderful new program. They're going to outlaw mercury thermometers as of the first of the year. You're not going to be able to buy mercury thermometer anywhere in the world because we're from the government. We want to protect our children from mercury poisoning, and yet they've been mandating this for years. In fact, an awful lot of parents, without even being told, their children were given their hepatitis B shots in the nursery before they were allowed to come home. Many times the parents didn't even know what they were signing, and many times they didn't even bother anything because the government had decreed every child was to have this, even though this is almost a non-problem in the United States unless the mother has hepatitis B. I mean, the far more children went to the hospital as a direct result of the hepatitis B vaccines than there were cases of hepatitis B in children less than 14 in the entire country back in 1996, the last figures we have. But then, of course, it's very disheartening. I don't know if you're aware of it, but, of course, the president now has ordered their lawsuits brought against the government for vaccine-related injuries related to thimerosal. The president has ordered that all of that information be sealed so that it's not available. The scientific evidence brought out in these cases cannot, under penalty of law, be released to other parents, and more than that, of course, in the new Homeland Security Act. Why, somebody snuck in, nobody knows who did it, nobody will admit to it, no member of Congress, no a member of the Senate knows how a provision got into this extensive bill that nobody ever even read, saying that Eli Lilly could not be sued for the putting of thimerosal into their vaccines. And the justification is, well, after all, if we let the people sue the vaccine manufacturers, who's going to manufacture the vaccines? But I would comment, if they can't manufacture safe vaccines, do we really want them for our children?
Well, that's exactly true. And what happened in the case of the Homeland Security bill, according to Dan Burton, who I would believe, is that this was a clean bill. And what the pharmaceutical vaccine manufacturers did is they influenced someone on Dick Armey's committee who had the last look at the bill. And once it left the nurture of the committee that made sure it was clean, and the very last minute they stuck in this provision about the no lawsuits, and Burton was not even aware that that was in there.
And neither was anybody else.
And neither was anyone else, and so by the time they finally realized that this was in there, all the supporters of Homeland Security had already signed the bill, and it was law. But as you say, the problem that we have with all of this is we saw in the anthrax vaccine. Here you had a company that was making the anthrax vaccine for the military who had numerous sanctions against them for poor manufacturing practices in which the vaccine was terribly contaminated and the soldiers were having serious reactions to it. Yet they continued to fund this one vaccine company because, as you said, who else is going to make the vaccine if this company folds? Well, the vaccine they were making was damaging and injuring more people than anthrax ever did. And the problem that we have in the bioterrorism field, which we talk about later in the book, the bioterrorism discussion, is that vaccines generally is not the answer to bioterrorism. And one of the world experts, Ken Alibak, who was the head of the bioprepared labs in the Soviet Union, which made all the bioterrorism organisms, the number one bioterrorism laboratory in the world, he said that what they did in the Soviet Union is all the people that worked in these labs had to take vaccines for all the terrible agents they were working with. And he said it absolutely destroyed their health. None of these people have ever been the same. And he said there's no question that vaccines is not the answer to bioterrorism. In addition, many of these bioterrorist agents are specifically genetically manipulated so that you cannot make vaccines against them. So, for instance, with this smallpox vaccine mania, the type of smallpox that would be released, of course, the vaccine would give you no protection whatsoever.
Because they would genetically alter it if it was right. Really made for that purpose. And I had the privilege of talking to Dr. Alibak. I couldn't get him to come on the program, but he told me he had taken 56 different vaccinations. He said, I'm allergic to everything. Sure. He said, you know, you give people this many vaccines, you're going to kill them.
Well, you see, this is what they did to the children. Now, with the children, Around, I think it was in the early 1980s, they decided to add more and more vaccines. And suddenly, as you said, there was up to 22, 26 different vaccines being given by age two. It never dawned on these people that, number one, you're adding some powerful adjuvants which boost the immune reaction to these vaccines. In addition, you're putting in the toxic mercury, and you're giving so many vaccines so close together, it overwhelms the immune system of these children, produces toxic brain reactions, which again goes back to the free radical generation, and the mercury on top of it makes that even worse. And it's what should be surprise to no one that when you have a child come into an office and give them 9 vaccines in one visit, that that child runs an extremely high risk of having a severe reaction and either becoming autistic or having ADD or ADHD or some other serious behavioral brain disorder directly due to these vaccines. And in the hearings that they recently had before Burton's committee, they told the scientists from the FDA, said we had 1,500 studies, 1,500 studies, showing that this mercury was toxic to the brain and to the rest of the body. Not one study showing that it was safe, yet they put it in the vaccines anyway, and they increased the number of vaccines so that the dose of mercury was so high that it equaled the damage, the doses that was producing the damage in these 1,500 studies.
Now, who gave that testimony that they had 1,500 studies? Was this a federal official or what?
Well, this was given by the scientists, and the FDA scientists admitted that. They asked her, how many studies do you have showing that mercury is toxic? He said, well, we've collected over 1,500 studies ourselves. Well, I found so many studies in writing the chapter for this book, I had to call a limit on it because there's so many studies. And what we found recently is that the dose of mercury necessary to produce brain disruption and injury is so small that there is no known safe level of mercury. Now, what happens with the vaccines is that they use what's called multi-dose vials, where they have a vial that contains vaccines that you can give numerous children out of one bottle. The thimerosal in there tends to settle in the bottom of the vial, so that if the nurse doesn't shake it up each time, the first child gets a lower dose of mercury, and the child, as the vaccine begins to be used up, the thimerosal concentrates, so the last child can get a very high dose of mercury. So that single injection can produce autism, serious brain destruction.
Well, now, how did the FDA justify allowing this to be done? After all, they regulate vaccines. Or was it simply the political pressures were so great that they couldn't stop them from poisoning? Or did anybody really care they were poisoning our children?
Well, the impression you get from the hearings and from my studies of it is that there was no one that seemed to care. These studies go back all the way from the very day that the mercury was first put into the vaccine.
When was that, the 30s or 40s?
Yeah, at least back then, and we can trace it back to the 50s for sure. And all of this, you know, thimerosal's only purpose is to sterilize the vaccine so that when you inject someone, they won't get infected from the injection. Well, we know that you have multi-dose vials of many medications, for instance, solumedrol, which is a steroid. They use a sterilizing agent that's not mercury. It works just fine. So we've used other sterilizing agents for equal length of time that were completely safe. They could have used in the vaccine. It wasn't a fact that mercury was the only thing they could use. It was that it was cheap, that no one was questioning it, and as they increased the number of vaccines and thereby increased the dose of mercury, still no one questioned it. The American Academy of Pediatrics is to blame at the top of the list, because even after it came out that, yes, this is destroying the brains of children and adults, the American Academy of Pediatrics' response was, well, we recommend that you ask or vaccines that do not contain thimerosal, but we should continue to vaccinate children until the existing stocks of the thimerosal-containing vaccine are used up.
That's exactly what they did with the original polio vaccine, the original Salk vaccine. They knew it had a cancer-producing virus in it, and they said, well, we'll use up the stock. That's what they did, when they knew that there was AIDS contamination, HIV contamination of the coagulating factor. They did that in France, and they used it up and contaminated large numbers of French children. Of course, over in France, they had trials, and they put the people in prison. Here, why simply we promote them and give them fancy jobs, high-paying jobs in the vaccine manufacturing companies. And, of course, this is what happens when you have a country that's taken God or morality out of society.
Exactly right. And as we see with the WorldCom case, and one of the chief executives admitted, he said, what's happened to morality in business is that there's no morality. And therefore, when they do something like this, they feel, well, this is just part of doing business, and, you know, everybody's doing it, and we don't really see anything morally wrong with it. And as Dan Burton told this FDA scientist, says, how can you sleep at night knowing you've destroyed the lives of all of these families, that these children will never be normal again, that their lives are destroyed of the whole family, not just the child, but the entire family, because you had to put the thimerosal and allow them to put it in there, even though you had 1,500 studies that told you that it was a serious brain toxin at the level you were allowing.
And what was the response to that?
Absolute silence. She could not. She had no answer. And he asked her, he said, do you have even one study that showed this mercury was safe? And she said, no.
Well, you know, we can thank Barbara Lowe Fisher and a few other people of the Vaccine Center, that I brought this out and just hammered away at it. And, you know, when of course this was brought forward, instead of trying to defend their position and say, we've got studies that show it's safe, they said, all right, we'll take it out. I don't know if they have taken it out, but, and then of course the complete cover-up by the Bush administration, and I'm not picking on them, I'm sure the Clinton administration would have done it as well, but of course sealing those records the legal records now for the 100 cases of suits against the federal vaccine fund, and then of course the new legislation they snuck into the Homeland Security bill, and then of course I see these articles in the Washington Times saying, well, you know, this was just what actually Congress intended to give the vaccine manufacturers a free ride, and what they did with the Office of Homeland Security legislation was simply to reiterate what Congress had already said, and all the excuses, and the final one was, well, you know, what if we don't protect the vaccine manufacturers, who will manufacture the vaccines? And my answer would be, if you're going to have a vaccine, it better be a safe vaccine. They have much, much safer smallpox vaccines if you want to take it. They manufacture them in Germany. They manufacture in Japan. They were used there extensively before vaccines were done away with, and we won't let them use it here. Because, of course, somebody is making an awful lot of money from the smallpox vaccine, and the government creates monopolies and benefits those people who come up with the largest amounts of money, and it's about time the American people either get involved or just write your children off, because they have poisoned literally tens, if not hundreds of millions of children here. I don't know how many children got the vaccines and the toxic effect, and we're going to be talking to Dr. Blaylock when we get back here in just a moment, really about, of course, if we have some idea of what's happening. We know that recent years, since we've been giving so many vaccines, we've doubled the autoimmune disease, doubled the allergies, doubled the asthma, and of course, not only that, but the autism rate has gone up 6 times in the last decade. And of course, the explanation is, the multiple vaccines, they don't see this in other countries, so they start giving the multiple vaccines. And then, of course, when they started giving them in England a year after we'd done it here, 10 years after we got it here, they got their rise in autism. We'll be right back here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when we have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you out there will decide right now you would like to help the Radio Liberty or join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we are able to do what we do 5 hours every day on radio, 5 hours every day on the internet, 3 hours every day on satellite, 2 hours every day on shortwave. But believe me, it's an expensive proposition when those bills come in every month. And, of course, if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WARM. And that's and then, of course, if you'd like a free copy of one of our newsletters, we can either send you the October newsletter, which was Kristen Breitweiser's testimony before the Senate Intelligence Committee, going into what really happened on September 11th. And, of course, Kristen Breitweiser's husband, Ron, died in the South Tower of the World Trade Center on September 11th last year. Her testimony, of course, was recorded on the video cameras. Her testimony was recorded by all of the various reporters who were there and more or less blacked out by our media. And so right now, if you'd like to get a free copy of the October newsletter, my November newsletter deals with the coming financial crisis. My December newsletter goes into a great deal more detail about the background, the foundation of our monetary system, facts that even I didn't know until I started writing the letter. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and we'll certainly go ahead and send you a free copy of our newsletter. Of course, we hope that you'll go to our website at www.radioliberty.com. That's www.radioliberty.com. Please tell others about our website. Tell them about our internet site, and, of course, encourage them to begin listening, to pull down our newsletter, to pull down the other things we have written up there, but mostly our programs, which are archived, and then, of course, help us to get the truth out all across America, from sea to shining sea, because, you see, parents don't know that they've been poisoning their children. We're just beginning to touch the surface of this. I mean, there's so much more here, and this is one issue when parents understand whether it's going on. Hopefully many of them will decide to get involved in this epic struggle with this. You see, we're dealing with organized evil. And, of course, if you study what's happened in the past, the wars, how they've created wars, totally unnecessary wars, sent our boys into certainly a meat grinder, knowing full well you're going to have fantastic numbers of men killed, send them on suicide missions. And those who desert, you send people out to kill them. But you can't ever let the American people know that. And, of course, how they covered these things up. And, of course, the Operation Phoenix, where we were assassinating people in Vietnam. And we've talked to people who were involved in this whole process. But we can't let the American people know, oh, no, we would never have professional assassins. You know, you get paid just $100 or $500 for the ear. And you don't even know whether it came from the person that they're supposed to assassinate. This was Operation Phoenix. And remember, ladies and gentlemen, men and women become accomplices of the evils they fail to oppose. Now, you don't have to believe anything I say, but if you want the documentation, we'll tell you where to get it. And then understand we're facing organized evil. And if God's people won't take a stand, who will? And if not now, when? Well, we'll be back here in just a moment with our special guest, Dr. Russell Blaylock. His book is entitled Health and Nutrition Secrets that can save your life, and it's available through, if you'd like to find out how to get it, why, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life by Dr. Russell Blaylock. Must reading. It's 2 hours that we're going to spend this evening. We'll just touch the surface of that, and if you decide to buy the book and you specifically ask for a tape of this program, why, we'll be glad to give that if you specifically request it. Let's get back to Dr. Blaylock here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and with us, of course, is Dr. Russell Blaylock, who's a neurosurgeon. He's retired from neurosurgery. He's written in several books, and, of course, he's writing another book on cancer. And, of course, these are extensively referenced with all, this book has pretty close to 600 references, doesn't it, Russell?
Right.
Okay, fine. Let's go to Herman calling in from Carmel. Hi, Herman. How are you doing?
Very good. I have two questions. The first question is, if you have a child, in my case, I have a good friend that's going to have a baby in 2 months, Now, what you've discussed tonight is very scary. Is there any way that a parent can prevent their child from having these vaccinations?
Well, according to the law now, you can tell your pediatrician you want only vaccines that do not contain thimerosal, and he has to give them to you. So they cannot give your child the thimerosal-containing vaccines involuntarily.
But, of course, will you ever know what he's going to give? You're not going to look at the bottle and find out, because my understanding is that they still have all these vaccines out there that have the thimerosal in them.
Well, if you tell him not to and he does it, then he's legally liable and he can be sued for malpractice.
But, of course, Herman, do not let them give the hepatitis B vaccine. That's just the most absurd thing in the world.
Right.
That's only being done so we will have enough money to finance giving it to the people in China, where they have 700 million people got hepatitis B primarily from vaccinations with dirty needles. 125 million in China today have active hepatitis B, and we got to finance it over in China. So they're hitting us for $80 a shot. $240 for the three shots plus the doctor's visits. Over there, they give them to for a dollar. We're subsidizing what's going on over there. That's what it's all about.
What people don't know is the hepatitis B vaccine was given to newborn babies not to protect the babies. It was because the health officials said the only way we can make sure everybody gets this vaccine is to get them as soon as they're born. Because once they're older, we may have trouble getting them back here to take this vaccine.
But that isn't valid because by the time they get to be 16, they have to have booster shots or it's not going to work.
Well, the thing about it is that it's not protecting the child at all. It was all a lie, making parents think this was to protect their child against hepatitis B. Unless you were a drug addict or had a transfusion in which you were infected with hepatitis, your child wasn't at risk. So it was predicated on a lie, and the other thing was they knew that these children's immune system was not developed at birth and that it was extremely dangerous to give a vaccine at birth, but they did it anyway because they wanted their health policy carried out.
And they really didn't care about the children. That is what this horrible thing is all about.
They had no concern for the child whatsoever. And the other thing that you need to know, and if you're getting ready to have children, is don't let them give multiple vaccines. Had the vaccine separated by six-month periods. The MMR vaccine should be separated into its different components, not all given together. Some states will allow you to do that, some won't. You'll have to check with your health officials in your state, find out what the policy is. Now, what I recommend for parents is have your child tested to see if they already have immune titers to these different diseases. They may not need vaccination at all. So if you take your child and they draw the blood and they find out that it already has antibodies to measles or mumps or pertussis, then they don't need a vaccine. That's the common sense thing to do, and that in most states, if you do that, they'll allow you not to have your child vaccinated.
And, of course, the other thing is, of course, there's no reason to give boys the rubella vaccine. You give it to girls because if they get rubella when they're pregnant, it can create disastrous effects. There's no reason to give girls mumps vaccine, and mumps is a very mild disease. You only give it to boys. They don't get orchitis when they get to be older. And if we weren't doing all the vaccinations, these kids would get the usual childhood diseases, and other than measles, there would not be a problem.
Well, and the other thing people don't understand is that in many cases we're finding that vaccinated children actually are much more susceptible to these diseases than unvaccinated children.
Because it's a different type of immune response.
Well, because it also is an abnormal way of getting exposure to the antigen. When you develop measles, you're not normally injected with a needle into your muscle. It passes through your mucous membrane. Well, that's a whole different immune system,
right,
and your mucous membrane, so that the response of that child is totally different. And they find that, for instance, when mumps came through different communities, the vaccinated children developed more infections than did the unvaccinated children. This has been repeated dozens of times, and recently they found the same thing with the chickenpox vaccine, that the vaccinated children actually got chickenpox more often than unvaccinated children.
We can't tell the parents that because they wouldn't then believe what their doctors are telling them, and the doctors simply tell them what they're forced to by the elite who control organized medicine.
Right.
Well,
they're being told by, you know, of course, pediatrician is listening to the American Academy of Pediatrics. The American Academy of Pediatrics is actually, a lot of them are on the vaccine boards, and it's been exposed that many of these members actually have stock in the companies. They're making money out of these vaccines being given, and that's why the American Academy of Pediatrics is giving this terrible advice to parents, and that's why they're pushing vaccination so hard. You know, we're given diphtheria vaccines, and when I was in medical school, we asked the pediatrician, had he ever in his life seen a case of diphtheria? Well, being in New Orleans, we saw one case, yet we vaccinate millions of children against a disease that essentially is non-existent in the United States anymore. So there's no justification for the massive vaccine programs that are going on and these huge numbers of vaccines being given to kids in the first place. And as I discuss in the book, it goes beyond the mercury issue. Even though mercury is terribly brain toxic, if you remove it, but you still give that large number of vaccines to a child, you're still going to get brain damage because it's an abnormal immune overload, and this activates part of the immune system in the brain that has been shown to produce brain injury of variable degrees. So taking the mercury out is not going to solve all the problem. You still have to make sure all the vaccines are given separately and they're separated by 6 months period.
Okay, Herman, did you have another question or comment?
Well, so all of this information that you've discussed is given in your book, so if I get this from my friends?
Right. It tells you about the vaccine schedules. It tells you about finding out about your rights, how to look about your state, find out whether or not your particular vaccine policy requires you to get these vaccines. Like the state of Mississippi, there's no exemption for any reason except purely medical, and it's very hard to get even then.
Well, it's about time that the people got up in arms and do away with these politicians who want to force us to poison our kids. Either that or move out of state. But people have to understand the reason we have the problems we do today is because good people do nothing. Anything else, Herman?
What are you familiar with photoluminescence?
In what respect?
Where the blood of a sick person, they apparently have used it in Russia. Dr. Campbell Douglas.
You're talking about ultraviolet.
Yes.
Right.
And, you know,
yeah.
He wrote an extensive thing about it and how wonderful it is and so forth. But then he tells you no way to get it in this country.
Well, generally you can't get it except by some alternative medicine practitioners. But we've known a long time that UV light inactivates viruses. Damages the DNA of the virus. So that's a possibility. But what we find, for instance, in the case of vaccinating the elderly for flu, the reason the elderly need flu vaccines is because their immune system's deficient. The reason it's deficient, age-related immune deficiency, is purely nutritional. You can give them a set of nutritional supplements, which I outline in the book, which will bring their immune system back to what it was when they were aged 20 and 30, and they will not have any need for vaccine.
Well, will the vaccines even work very well if they really don't have a good immune system?
Right, if their immune system is dysfunctional, and they admit this, but they don't tell the public, that if your immune system is deficient, you should not be vaccinated. Well, that's why these elderly are getting the flu and in risk of dying from the flu, is because they're immune deficient.
But a lot of them get very sick from the flu shot, and some of them die from the flu shot. So,
exactly.
People do not understand, and the average doctor really has not looked into this as thoroughly as Dr. Blaylock has. And I'll have to admit, when I was practicing, I didn't have time to worry about that. I was interested in taking care of bones. But I will tell you, I have never had a flu shot, and I never intend to get one. Anything else, Herman?
Well, what state are you based in, Doctor?
Mississippi.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Okay, well, we'll look forward to getting your book if you'll tell us where we can get
it. Well, you just give us a call. You know our 800 number. Thanks
great.
So much,
Thank
Herman.
You. God
bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, fine. We've got a retired dentist calling in from Kennewick, Washington. Hi, Neil. How are you?
Hi, Dr. Stan. I'd like to ask Dr. Blaylock. I went to the University of Washington in dental school, which was considered a good school. and graduated in 54. But the argument about mercury and amalgam fillings, from what I found, in an amalgam filling, the mercury in the amalgam forms a eutectic. Now, has it been proven that amalgam fillings, there's a leaking out of the mercury or harmful effects to the patient?
I'm glad you asked that. Russell, you want to take that? Because I know you have very strong feelings on that. And there is so much scientific evidence out there that they never tell the dentist. Go ahead.
Well, actually, you know, this has been known for some time that it vaporizes from the amalgam. In fact, I think the first demonstration was back in 1930, which was reconfirmed numerous times after that, even by radio labeling, in which they would label with radioactive tracers the mercury. They implanted it in a sheep's teeth and then followed it through the tissues. And they could trace the mercury going through the olfactory nerve directly to the brain and the radioactive mercury accumulating in the brain. So by numerous methods, in fact, other methods, they had people with dental amalgam in their teeth chew on a piece of rubber tubing, measured their blood mercury level, and saw that it increased 3 to 4 levels just from the fact from chewing. When they would drink hot liquids, their blood mercury levels rose 3 to 4-fold as well. So this has been demonstrated numerous times. Now, the ADA knows that. What they've been doing is telling the dentist a fairy tale. It is not true, and unfortunately, the dentist is being damaged, and probably worse than anybody in society, because if you're filling teeth with dental amalgam and handling it, and drilling it out and putting new amalgam in, the level of mercury in your office is substantial. In fact, OSHA did a study of dentist's office and found that 15 to 20% of dentist's offices exceeded safe levels of mercury, and not only in the dentist work area, but also in the waiting area as well. When they looked at the dental aspirator, they found it had levels 10 times higher than the OSHA standard, and that as these little particulate pieces of mercury accumulated in the filter of the aspirator and it began to heat up, the vapor from the mercury increased even more. So the dentist was being exposed to a substantial level of mercury. They've done mercury levels in dentists and found they're elevated in direct proportion to the amount of amalgam that they handle. So every way you could possibly measure this or look at it, it has been done and has been proven that this fairy tale that it's in a bind, metal binding amalgam and it will not escape is totally a lie.
And initially, this wasn't used at all. What was that, that it was considered unethical to use the amalgam fillings, and then somebody, you know, because they were making so much money on it, actually created a new organization for the dentist to use it? Well, tell that story.
Yeah, in the beginning, you know, dental amalgam has been used for 150 years in the United States. And in the beginning, it was considered by the American Society of Dental Surgeons, which was the original dental organization, that if you used dental mercury amalgam, they would throw you out of the dental association. But it was making so much money for the dentists because they didn't have to use silver, which was very expensive. So many dentists were doing it that eventually the American Society of Dental Surgeons collapsed. Because all the members had left or had been thrown out, so they formed their own organization called the American Dental Association, which then endorsed the use of dental amalgam. So for 150 years, it's been used.
No, but actually, there is silver in what they use now, isn't there?
Yes. Well, there's not much, you know, and some doesn't have any. It's a various amount. It can be zinc, it can be tin, it can be aluminum. Different metals are mixed with the mercury itself to make up this amalgam. But it's about 42 to 52% mercury.
So it's something else there added.
And if we look at the sources of mercury in the United States and in the Western world, dental amalgam is the number one source. vaccines is second, and food sources are close behind that.
How about fish, what they're saying, dangerous? And
it's about seven times higher or association with dental amalgam than it is fish. But some fish, you know, it depends on the size of the fish. Tuna, shark, the larger fish have higher levels of mercury. And it's a different form of mercury. It's called methylmercury. Now, methylmercury enters the brain much easier than ionic mercury. The dental amalgam, unfortunately, forms both forms of mercury. It forms the ionic form of mercury, and it forms methylmercury because of the bacterial action on the amalgam itself. So in that case, you're getting very high brain levels of the mercury. And the other thing that's interesting about dental amalgam source of mercury is that the amount that will enter breast milk is much higher from dental amalgam than it is from fish. So this puts the baby at higher risk. We also know that the placenta tends to concentrate the mercury in the baby. So that if the mother has dental amalgams, her baby will have much higher mercury levels than she'll have. And the ADA even has recently come out and said that women who are pregnant or intending to be pregnant should not have dental work done with amalgam. So they recognize it's a danger to the baby, and I think there's legislation in California in which women have to be warned about it. But that means any woman, if she plans to get pregnant, if she's a 13-year-old child and one day she's going to be pregnant, you certainly don't want to put a dental amalgam in her mouth at age 13, because it's still going to be leaching out mercury when she's getting ready to have her babies. And what we're seeing in the United States is so many people have dental amalgam, I mean, it's 180 million put in every year, that you're getting the mercury from the amalgam that goes into the baby, then the baby's born and they start vaccinating them with the Marisol.
Now, of course, the other thing is, of course, that this information is getting out on the Internet. And the ADA and the California Dental Association, I don't know about up there in Washington, but they're scared to death that they're going to get lawsuits. Now, the lawyers who are handling it, they said, look, we'll drop the lawsuits, you know, if you'll just quit using the amalgam fillings. You know, we're not here to make a lot of money, you know, start using porcelain fillings. We'll back away from this completely. And the leaders of the ADA are so bullheaded and so really dishonest that they're saying, no, there's nothing wrong with it. And this thing ever goes to court, you're going to see dentists literally wiped off the map. And yet, of course, there's no need for it at all because they'll drop the case right now at the national and local level if they'll just quit using the amalgam films. Neil, did you have something else you wanted to say?
Yes, in defense of the use of it, when I got out of school, there was no dental insurance, no welfare. And it's strictly economics, and we were taught that gold is the preferable material to use in teeth, restoring lost tooth structure, which required a gold casting, and it's about five times as expensive as silver, as silver amalgams. And we didn't have composites then. So it was strictly a matter of economics. Are you gonna put gold inlays in primary teeth that they only have for about another 5 or 6 years until they shed them?
Well, the problem of that argument is that it's economics, but when you look at it, the long-term economics of the mercury poisoning in a child or in an adult or a pregnant woman far exceeds any savings you're going to make. I mean, you're doing permanent brain damage to that person.
I mean, how do you put a dollars and cents of value on that? I know, Dale, you did what you were taught to do when I was a doctor. I did what I was taught to do.
Yeah.
I'm not being critical of you.
I don't blame the dentist. The problem with the poor dentist is they were being lied to. They didn't know just how toxic this was. They had no idea. They were told this fairy tale about it being in an amalgam mixture and not being released. So the dentist, in my mind, is not the culprit. He's a victim.
And he is even more of a victim because he gets very high levels of mercury. This is a fascinating book, Neil. You'll really find that you'll learn a lot because it's all based, all the scientific articles are there. I mean, almost 600 scientific articles. I'm sure that there are lots more than that, but those are the ones that he's put in to verify the various chapters. So, you know, I have no question at all that this is a real problem. I've been told by other dentists who've studied it, there's so much evidence today. And, you know, maybe back then they really didn't know when you got out of school. but they sure know now, and they're covering it up. They're afraid to admit the truth, and they're continuing to harm individuals, just like they're continuing to give the mercury-laced vaccines, and they know they're harmful, and they're doing it anyway. That is unconscionable. Anything you'd like to say, Neil, before we let you go?
No, that's fine. But I would make one remark. When I went in the Navy after dental school, and those young Marines, a lot of them had never been to a dentist before they went in the service.
Right.
Yeah. But it's really only people that had money could afford to send their kids to the dentist.
Right.
And if you start to say, well, the only filling you should have is gold, and they certainly couldn't afford that.
But now, you see, it's different. You've got porcelain fillings and all
composites.
Sorts of... Right. Yes. Okay. So they have lots of other things to do now, and they're not doing it.
No. Today they do, yes.
And you see, they know that it's toxic today. Maybe they didn't know it was toxic then, but they know it's toxic today, right. And they're still, of course, using it. God bless you. Thanks so much for calling.
God bless you.
Okay, fine. Well, we're sort of getting to that point here. We're going to have to consider saying goodbye to our friends up there in the Great Northwest. And, of course, if you're interested, our guest this evening has been Dr. Russell Blaylock. His book is Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. And if you'd like any information on how to get the book, why, the telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And I will tell you, we've just touched the beginning of this, actually. There are 10, 15 chapters, and we're only in chapter one. Of course, if you have access to the Internet, you can listen to the second hour of our interview with Dr. Blaylock at RadioLiberty.com, or you can get the second hour by calling us at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And you can get the second hour that way. Or remember, RadioLiberty.com, live audio there, and we always have the second hour on there. So until tomorrow at the same time, when we'll be back with you, if you're a listener in the Northwest, this is Dr. Sten asking you to pray for America, asking you to pray for revival, because if America doesn't turn back to God, God is going to turn his back on America. And then we ask you to pray for our leaders and for our ministers, and to remember to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And remember those words of Thomas Jefferson: God, who gave us life, gave us liberty, but can the liberty of a nation be secure when the conviction has been forgotten that liberty is the gift of God? I tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just, and his justice cannot sleep forever. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295, but please hold your calls. Well, if you want to call in, that's all right. 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. Right now, of course, we have with us Dr. Russell Blaylock. We're talking about his book, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. And, of course, we've been talking about mercury. We've been talking about it in the vaccines. We've been talking about in fish. We've been talking about it in dental amalgam. What about the mercury thermometers? Is there any danger there?
Actually, it's very dangerous, and I give several instances, one in which a lady broke a mercury thermometer in her house, and so she decided she'd just vacuum it up, and she vacuumed it up. Well, everybody in the house had severe neurological injury from it, several of which never recovered.
That's just from the mercury that's in a thermometer.
In a thermometer. So the vacuum just vaporized it. It vaporizes very easily at room temperature and filled the house with mercury vapor at very high levels. And so it took extreme measures to clean out this house. Other cases in which the amount of mercury that's in a thermometer result in such high levels, they had to demolish the house. So it doesn't take a lot of mercury to produce severe toxicity, and the amount in mercury thermometers is extremely toxic, but you know, people that have a mouth full of dental amalgam, they have almost that much mercury in their amalgam. So a lot of people are walking around with a thermometer full of mercury in their mouth, and they're not even being told. And every time they chew and every time they drink hot liquids, a tremendous amount of this mercury vapor is released. It's highly absorbable through the tissues of the mouth, so their blood levels and brain levels go up considerably. And over many years of chewing and eating and carrying this amalgam around in their teeth, their brain accumulation reaches such a level they begin to develop neurological disease. One of the early symptoms that we knew for a long time that was associated with mercury toxicity was irritability. People become very shy sometimes. They'd have a high suicide tendency and undergo personality changes. These are rather subtle things that you wouldn't normally associate with the amalgam in your teeth, the fillings in your teeth. But this is the kind of things that we see with that level of mercury toxicity in people. So, you know, even something as seemingly unconnected as suicide could be related to mercury accumulation in your body. So people need to know that. They're not being told. If they're getting their flu vaccine, plus they have these amalgam in their teeth, they're getting a very high level of mercury accumulation. These are the things I talk about in the book, but it's not just a lot of bad news. I also tell you things that are important in protecting you against mercury toxicity. For instance, on unborn babies, we've discovered that high levels of selenium intake in the mother tends to protect the baby's brain against mercury toxicity. We find things that as simple as garlic is extremely efficient in removing mercury from the brain. There's very few things that can remove it. So just a garlic extract can remove about 34% of the brain's mercury, which is high, as you see, even in medical chelation. So when you combine these various things, the antioxidants, vitamin E, vitamin C, different flavonoids from your fruits and vegetables, N-acetyl-L-cysteine, which is a supplement you can get at your health food store, garlic, and selenium, you're getting considerable protection against mercury toxicity, which can make the difference between you developing a neurodegenerative disease like Alzheimer's disease. So these are things that are discussed in the book. I also discuss a supplement called alpha-lipoic acid, which has been shown to be very efficient at removing mercury from the brain. And I outline for the reader exactly the method that you need to use to have the dental amalgam removed from your mouth safely, because you can't just go to the dentist and ask them to drill it out. You'll be worse off than you started. If a dentist tries to drill it out, your brain level will increase 50%, and your blood level has 3 or 4 fold increase for a month after it's drilled out. And we know that several people have done this, and there's been several studies that indicated that several people develop neurological symptoms after doing this. So there's a particular method that has to be followed in order to safely remove this amalgam from your teeth, and that's outlined in the book for you.
All right, and of course I remember when I was just a boy, but of course the standard treatment for syphilis was mercury shots, and we used to give these people mercury shots with the idea that was going to kill the spirochetes, and then a lot of these people would develop a severe mental disease and would say, oh, that's the tertiary syphilis, the syphilis acting on the brain. But isn't there evidence now that a lot of those people were actually getting toxicity, mercury toxicity, from the treatment, which was worse than the disease?
That's true, and in fact, a review of the use of mercury in treating syphilis indicated that it really was not very efficient in treating the syphilis, but that we knew that those levels of mercury that were being used in these patients produced dementia. If you look back into the 20s and 30s, the number one reason for admission to a mental institute was neurosyphilis. It is syphilis of the brain, the tertiary syphilis. But as you say, that was an assumption that it was tertiary syphilis. There's also a lot of evidence that it was mercury toxicity that was filling up the mental institutes. So, here you have an experimental system that was carried out on the public, unbeknownst to them, that the treatment was worse than the disease. So that certainly is a consideration, and I do discuss that in the book to some detail, the history of the use of mercury to treat syphilis.
Okay, fine. Well, then let's go to the chapter two. Now, we've done chapter one so far in an hour and 7 minutes. Let's get to chapter two, which is, of course, fluoride. And, of course, the government officials and their wisdom are mandating, at least here in California, that every community with over 10,000 water hookups has to fluoridate their water. And, of course, you talk to the average doctor, he will tell you water fluoridation is great. It's going to protect the children's teeth. You talk to the dentist, he's going to say water fluoridation is great. It's going to protect the children's teeth. You go to the politicians, many who are getting campaign contributions from the people who have the fluoride, which is a toxic substance. In fact, it's so toxic, it's very expensive to get rid of. It's a byproduct of aluminum manufacturer, byproduct of fertilizer manufacturer. And so rather than have to put it into the expensive dumps, toxic waste sites, they found a wonderful solution. They're going to put it into your water. And you say, well, that couldn't be true. I mean, it can't be harmful. Why don't you tell us about the effect of fluoride, what it does to the body, what it does to the brain, what it does to the reproductive system, and, of course, the background of water fluoridation, which I think is one of the most horrible things ever done to any group of people. In fact, almost no country in Europe has it. My understanding is the only place in the British Isles it's used is in Northern Ireland, where, of course, they have all the unrest there. But they wouldn't use it in Great Britain itself. And, of course, all of Europe has done away with it. But here in America, of course, they're poisoning not only the adults, but our children. Go ahead, tell the story, please, Russell.
Well, to start out, I would quote the former EPA scientist, Robert Carlton, who said, and this is a quote I give in the book, fluoridation is the greatest case of scientific fraud of this century. And as I researched this, I found out that that's exactly what it was a fraud, and it is probably one of the greatest frauds that has ever been perpetrated, and it continues despite overwhelming evidence that it's a total fraud.
And, of course, when you read the newspapers, they always say, well, these kooks on the right, they say it's a communist plot, and now that the communists are dead, they say it's just a plot, and, you know, but there's absolutely no scientific evidence against water fluoridation. How would you respond to that?
Well, the interesting thing was that on September 18, 1943, the American Medical Association warned that fluoride was a powerful protoplasmic poison and that we should be careful to remove it from water supplies. This was naturally found fluoride. Then on October 1, 1944, the Journal of the American Dental Association also warned of the potential harm of fluoridation of water. Now, at this time, Andrew Mellon, who was the president and founder of Alcoa Aluminum, who was also the Secretary of Treasury, and under his department was the U.S. Public Health Service. At that time, he had concocted this plan of putting the fluoride in the water to prevent cavities. Now, 3 months after these two organizations, the AMA and the ADA, warned that fluoride in the water was extremely toxic, 3 months later, they reversed position and endorsed fluoridation of water to prevent cavities. And it's interesting that at that time, there was not one study, not a single study, that indicated the safety of fluoride or that fluoride produced any reduction in cavities except by the destruction of teeth themselves. So the whole thing was predicated on a lie. Now,
but a lie told often enough is believed. That's the tragedy.
That's right. And then, of course, they said, well, let's have some test cities in which we'll fluoridate one city and then have a matching city and we'll fluoridate it and we'll follow them and see what it does to the cavity rate. They did that. The first one was Grand Rapids, Michigan, and then Muskegon was the matching unfluoridated city. And they did it also in fluoridated Newburgh, New York, and unfluoridated Kingston, New York. They followed it now for the last 50, almost 60 years. The results of those studies, of the 60-year follow-up comparing fluoridated and unfluoridated cities, is that there is no reduction in tooth decay whatsoever. And in fact, other studies that have been followed since that time have indicated actually there's a greater decay of teeth in the fluoridated community. So the very basis of the fluoridation, that is prevention of cavities, by their own studies, has been proven to be false.
Now, what about these studies that these areas that were supposedly told where, you know, there's natural water, fluoride in the water, some of the Indian areas, and supposedly much lower incidence of fluoride in those regions. Is that valid, or is that simply one of the old wives' tales?
Well, the study that they did originally, which gave the Alcoa Aluminum people the idea to carry this out, was bauxite, Arkansas, had naturally high level of fluoride. They had their paid dental expert go there and look at it and say, well, there's a 60% reduction in dental caries or tooth problems, cavitation, in that area. When they looked at it later, what they found out is that the fluoride was causing two things. One is the delayed development of teeth in children. Therefore, they had fewer teeth, and that meant fewer cavities, because if you don't have as many teeth, you can't have as many cavities. And in the adults, they were finding that the teeth were falling out early. They did a similar study in nuclear workers in the Manhattan Project because they were exposed to high fluoride in the manufacture of uranium, and they reported that they also had fewer cavities. And when they looked at them, many of them were totally edentulous. They had no teeth. Many of them had lost most of their teeth. And again, it was the old idea, fewer teeth, fewer cavities.
But you see, they were telling you the truth. There were fewer casualties, but they weren't telling you the whole truth.
Right. And another study that the government conducted, which was one of the largest studies ever done, was over 360,000 people, again followed the fluoridation to see if it reduced cavities. They never released the results of this report, and it was hidden in the government, and they refused to release it. Well, a researcher forced them under the Freedom of Information Act to finally release this report, and when he reviewed it, found out that they had discovered the same thing, that there was no reduction in cavities at all in 362,000 people followed over 2 decades. Now, the government came back and said, oh, but we found that the people less than 6 years of age did have fewer cavities, went back and reexamined it, and it was the same thing, fewer teeth caused by the fluoride meant fewer cavities. So that their own study of over 300,000 people, the largest study ever done, indicated the same thing. Now, what about other countries? Well, Dr. Colquhoun, who was a dentist down in New Zealand, head of the Socialized Dental Society, was given the task of looking at compared cities, one that was fluoridated, the other was non-fluoridated, and writing up all the statistics. And he was a great proponent of fluoridation. He thought it was the greatest thing in the world. It was going to cure the problem of rotten teeth. But when he finished his study, he realized that actually there was no difference in the cavity rate in the two cities. And he went to the people that had put the program together, and he says, you know, I'm a little concerned because I'm looking at this, the data, and the data indicates that fluoridation does not prevent cavities. And they said, oh, we'll have to work with the figures a little bit. We're going to send you on a world tour. We want you to look at other countries and come back with some data there. So he went all over the world, London, the United States, Germany, and England, France. Everywhere he went, it was the same thing. The same thing was being reported, that the fluoridated communities had just as many cavities as the unfluoridated communities. In many cases, he found the unfluoridated communities actually had fewer cavities. And so he came back to New Zealand and met with the Australian authorities and said, look, I've been all over the world. I've looked at our statistics, and we're finding the same thing, that fluoride does not prevent cavities. And so they have tried to hush him up, and so he got fed up with it, and he became an enemy of fluoridation. They immediately began to attack the man. Since that time, there's been numerous studies. Dr. Steelink studied 26,000 children in Tucson, Arizona. He found a higher incidence of cavities in fluoridated communities than non-fluoridated. In India, there's a big problem of fluoride in their water. They studied over 400,000 people and found that fluoride levels in the water increased cavity rates, and it was directly proportional. The more fluoride, the more cavities. The reason they were all finding this is because fluoride destroys the dental enamel. It's called dental fluorosis. This has now become a major problem in the United States. When they started looking at fluoridated communities, what they found out is that the children were starting to get these little white specks in the enamel of their teeth, and with time, as they became adults or older teenagers, it was turning into brown, mottled, very ugly-looking teeth called dental fluorosis. And that was the fluoride destroying and weakening the enamel of the teeth, and that's why they're beginning to find that fluoridated communities actually have more cavities than unfluoridated. Dentists have told me that when you see cavities in fluoridated communities, they're much more destructive because they destroy the inside of the tooth before they finish destroying the enamel. And it's very difficult to drill these teeth because they're so soft they break apart and the enamel's very soft.
Now, I've talked to dentists who tell me that, my closest friend is a dentist, and he has certainly been doing dentistry for 40 years or more. And he said that children's teeth today are much better than they were 40 years ago. And, of course, many of these children have taken the fluoride pills, very, very low dose given, because we don't fluoridate our water where I live. So they, at least many of them, would got some pills from their parents. And his point was, but look, the children's teeth are much better than they were 40 years ago. So how would you respond to that?
Well, the interesting thing that came out of these studies is when they looked at comparisons of fluoridated and unfluoridated community, there was a drastic reduction in cavities in both communities.
And that, of course, is the thing, because of better dental
nutrition.
And
they found that people were eating more foods that contained calcium and would strengthen the enamel of the teeth. So there was an across-the-board reduction in cavities that was equal all over the world, whether it was fluoridated or non-fluoridated. And as we say, as fluoridation increases over the years, actually you're seeing more dental caries in fluoridated communities and non-fluoridated. So that's why he's seeing more or better tooth health now as compared to the 1940s, because everybody's getting healthier because of their nutrition improving as compared to back then. Now, the important thing, as you were asking about the damage of fluorides, numerous studies have been done, many of which were mandated by Congress. One was the question, does fluoride cause cancer? Because it's a very reactive compound, it produces free radicals, it's been known to damage DNA. It damages the enzyme that allows your body to repair injury to the DNA, which has a lot to do with cancer. And so some of these studies, what they found is that if you inject these fluoride solutions under the skin, the animals were developing fibrosarcoma, which is a very malignant tumor. This was done at the Argonne National Labs. They also found that if you gave animals one part per million fluoride in water, which is the amount that's added to water, if that animal happened to have a tumor, these tumors were increasing in growth by 25%. What this would mean to people is that if you're living in a fluoridated community and you happen to develop cancer, there's going to be a 25% increased growth rate of your cancer. So that was something that was quite shocking, but again, ignored by the medical community in large. Dr. Dean Burke and Yaman Yannis, back in 1977, because of this research linking it to cancer, began to look at large areas of fluoridated versus non-fluoridated areas, first east of the Mississippi and then west of the Mississippi. And what they found is that in the fluoridated communities, there was a significant elevation of cancer of various types, particularly of rare liver cancer and a bone cancer. Now, one of the problems in young men in age 15 to 25 is bone cancer, osteogenic sarcoma. The government actually funded a study of three major cities that were fluoridated compared to unfluoridated cities of the like size. They found there was a 6 to as much as a 12-fold increase in bone cancer in fluoridated communities. A recent study has quantitated that is, they found out why. And that's because fluoride tends to accumulate in the bones. The longer you live in a fluoridated community, the higher the fluoride level in your bones become, and it never leaves. It's almost impossible to remove this fluoride. When they started to taking bone biopsies to see just how much was accumulating, they found levels of 10 to 15,000 parts per million. That is a huge amount. That's 10 to 15,000 times more than is being added to water. Then they looked at the young men who were developing osteogenic sarcoma, and this is a fairly recent study, and they found out that they had enormous levels of fluoride in their bones, as much as 80,000 parts per million, 60,000 parts per million. One of the dentists in Canada who became concerned about what's called skeletal fluorosis, that is destruction of the bones, also did biopsy studies in fluoridated communities and found these enormously high rates of fluoride destruction. In this country, there's almost no research and no mention of skeletal fluorosis. In European scientific literature, you'll see it discussed. But basically what this is, we know because the fluoride is so toxic and it accumulates in the bones, it begins to destroy the cells of the bones. This produces the hunchback, the bones that are misshapen. It causes what we call spinal stenosis, where the spine closes up around the nerves going to the legs and the bowel and the bladder, which when I was a neurosurgeon, we saw just absolutely tons of this all over. This is caused by fluoride, and this has been known for years. There'd be villages where they had fluoride high content. And one of the observations was that everybody there looked old, that they couldn't find any young people. Then they found out that people actually were 30 and 40 years old, but they looked like they were 70. And that's because this fluoride was destroying their skeleton, and they were all hunchbacked and having these disorders of joint pains and weakness and neurological problems. So we knew that it, number one, is destroying the teeth, it's destroying the skeleton, it's related to cancer.
Well, we're going to get to these other things, but we've got three Theodore hanging on the line here, and we want to get to, there's so much more as far as the toxicity of fluoride, but right now Theodore is on the line, and of course, I don't know whether you know, but there was an effort a couple of years ago to actually fluoridate the water here in Santa Cruz, and fortunately, because of the efforts of people like Theodore and others in our community, and of course, in the vernacular of left-right, she would be considered a very liberal activist, but I will tell you that we worked right along with the people because we agreed totally with their position that it was totally irresponsible to put fluoride in the water. And despite the fact we were, everybody was attacked by the local newspaper, and attacked every of these kooks in Santa Cruz, you know, they don't want to fluoridate the water, they don't care about the children. Why, we won, and we kept the fluoride out. So, Theodore, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Well, hi, Dr. Stan, and another great program. And I won't be long because this is so much important information, but that's one reason I called, to let your guest know that we definitely need more education in this area, but we have taken on this issue two times now, and recently just down in Watsonville.
Oh, and they said, you know, there's no scientific evidence, there's any harm, but they never cite any scientific evidence. They just attack the people and demonize the kooks who don't want to put the poison in the water.
Well, us kooks keep winning. We won in Santa Cruz 2 years, 3 years ago, I guess, and we won just last November in Watsonville. And the good news is that there was, for your local listeners, there was some concern whether the city council would actually honor the vote of the people. Because all along, this is a real agenda to get the fluoride in there, and the politically connected people are very much behind the fluoridation in this community. And the people voted it down and voted a very strong law in that they would have to overcome. But the question was, will the city council honor it? And the city council did. They rejected the grant for fluoridation. So I want to share the good news with your listeners and with your guests to know that people are paying attention and we are doing our homework and we are taking, while he has wonderful information, we're taking the next step, which is what we citizens need to do, which is to get politically active and pass the laws to keep the fluoridation out of our waters. So, again, I want to thank you for another great program, and let me get off and let your guests keep talking.
And thank you for everything you do, Theodore,
well,
because
you
it's because
too.
Of people like you that are out there getting the information. And, of course, once the mothers of this country realize what they're doing to their children, and we're going to talk in a few minutes what the fluoride does to the brains of our children. And, of course, then we'll get into what it does as far as reproduction is concerned. And I mean, this is a toxin that affects, a poison that affects every aspect of our body. And the thing is that the people on the other side know that. And when the American people begin to understand that there really are evil and wicked people out there that know exactly what they're doing, maybe at that point they'll wake up. Anyway, thanks so much.
And again,
daughter.
Thank you for letting us get the information out.
Okay, God bless.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, fine. Well, Russell, it's a strange world we live in, but Theodore is totally dedicated, and God bless her for what she's done, and all the other people who worked here, both in Santa Cruz and in Watsonville, to defeat the people with it, had the full support of all the newspapers saying, oh, we've just got to fluoridate the water. And I will tell you, we had a couple of little throwaway newspapers that were bringing the truth out, and because of people like Theodore and many of her friends and the local environmentalists, the people who publish these throwaway publications, why it was a resounding victory for our side. And the other side just can't understand why the people are so stupid that they don't want the fluoride in the water. So we're going to be back here in just a couple of moments with our special guest this evening, Dr. Russell Blaylock, his book, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. That's Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. We're only on Chapter 2, and we probably won't get much beyond that before this evening is over. If you'd like more information on how to get the book, you might want to call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Because believe me, ladies and gentlemen, our children, our families, our friends, all of us are under attack today. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and you know, there's nothing more important than the mind of a child. When they are able to track our brains, why, we're in real trouble, and fluoride attacks the brain. And we'll be talking more about that when we get back with Dr. Blaylock, but this is the time I have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener-supported. And if you're out there across America listening to us, we hope that many of you will decide that you're going to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're able to do what we do 5 hours every day. So if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. If you'd like to get a free copy of our newsletter, our September newsletter deals with the real reason for the September 11th attack last year. Our October newsletter is Christian Breitweiser's testimony before the Senate Intelligence Committee, Select Committee on Intelligence, on the 18th of September this year, testimony which was pretty well blocked out by the major media because they wouldn't want you to really suspect what really happened that day. Our November newsletter gives you an introduction to fiat money and, of course, what's happening to our society. Our December newsletter, which will be out before long, gives you the occult history of our monetary system. You say occult history? Oh, come on now, Stan. Well, all I ask you is to read the letter and decide for yourself if this incredible, incredible story could be true. Then if you are amazed by what you've been hearing Dr. Blaylock talk about this evening, I think you'll be even more amazed when you find out the origin of our current monetary system. Contrary to everything you've been taught by your conservative leaders and other people who write about this, there's an aspect of this which nobody has ever mentioned before, and I think you'll find our December newsletter fascinating. And, of course, we hope that many of you will want to get it on a regular basis. But if you'd like to get a free copy of any one of those, and you haven't got the letters before, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because we are under attack today, and we have been for a long time. And then, of course, we hope that you'll go to our website. That's radioliberty.com, that you'll pull down our programs there. And, of course, that you'll tell others about our website, about our Internet programs. You know, it's amazing. People are telling people are telling people. Copy our tapes. Copy our videos. Copy, certainly, our newsletters. Help us to get the truth out across America while we still have time. And let's get back to Dr. Russell Blaylock. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and of course, the Centers for Disease Control, which has very little to do with controlling disease. It is simply a political organization that is an extension of the power structure and their agenda, which at least in part involves population control. The CDC is advocating that every community fluoridate their water. Now, why would we do that when it isn't used in Europe? Certainly they have, most countries over there have given this up if they ever accepted it. They have access to the same information we do. And the truth of the matter is they simply block out the information here in the United States so the doctors and the dentists don't understand. And your job out there in the listening audience is to get the facts, and we can tell you how to get the scientific studies if you need to. And then you go to your dentist and you say, how can you possibly support poisoning the children? How can you possibly support what you're doing? Have you personally checked the information out? Will you read these articles and tell me what you think about them after reading them, and I'll want to talk to you next week or week after that, or listen to this tape, or get a tapes of this program. But let's get on into how fluoride affects the brain and then how it affects the reproductive system. We've already talked about the bones, and I will tell you as an orthopedic surgeon, there are at least 4 studies in the Journal of American Medical Association showing that if women drank fluoridated water before they went through the menopause, their incidence of hip fractures was up. What are the exact statistics on that, Russell? Was it, 50%, double? What was the incidence of hip fractures?
It was doubled, and in fact, they did another study and found that women before menopause had increased fractures. So the fluoride was so damaging to the bones that it increased the fractures in both of these groups.
And of course, people are not being told the significance of this. If you want to do away with old women, do you know a better way to do it? Well, people say nobody would be that crass, that uncaring. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, there are people who would be that crass and uncaring. They know what this does. They just don't want you to know. Let's talk about what it does to the brain, and then maybe we can talk about what it does to the reproductive system.
Well, the brain is also another organ that accumulates fluoride, and the measures that have been done in fluoride levels of human brain found its increase in all of the major areas of the brain, particularly the nuclei of the limbic system, which controls your behavior, in addition to the prefrontal and the hippocampus part of the brain, which has to do with Alzheimer's disease and your ability to think cognitively. Now, the Chinese did an interesting study because they have some areas that have high natural fluoride contents in their water. And what they did is they compared a community that had 4 parts per million fluoride with one that had almost no fluoride in it. And they were looking primarily at the IQ of the children living in these areas. Now, 4 parts per million is the limit that's allowed by our government. It says you can have up to but not exceeding 4 parts per million. So they're not talking about extreme levels. We're talking about levels that are acceptable by our government. The ADA asked the government to raise it to 8 parts per million. So that's the level the Chinese were looking at is half of what the ADA was asking for. Now, the results of their study was that there was a 10% drop in the IQ in the fluoridated communities versus non-fluoridated.
10% to 10 points in the IQ.
Right. And what this means, because it's a bell curve, is that you have a 10% increase in the number of low IQ children, but you also have a 10% reduction in the high IQ children. So you have fewer children that will grow up being very bright, and you have 10% more children who are severely retarded or impaired.
And, of course, if you have an IQ of 90, you can get by pretty well. But if you have an IQ of 80, you're in real trouble. If you have an IQ of 80 and you go to 70, why, of course, you are, not much outside of an institution.
That's right. So this is rather profound. I mean, we're talking about a 20% effect on the IQ in this Chinese study. And nobody argues with this study. Now, recently, there's 2 studies that have been done that are absolutely profound and should scare the pants off anyone who lives in a fluoridated community. One was done by Dr. Phyllis Mullenix, who is a world expert in neurotoxicology, that is, toxic substances' effect on the brain. And she did this study looking at the effect of fluoridating water and giving it to pregnant animals to see the effect on their brain function. She used levels that were comparable to what's being added to human water systems. What she found was that if you gave the animals the fluoridated water before birth, when they were born, these animals were very hyperactive, that is, like children with ADHD. If you began to give the fluoridated water after the birth of the child, then they became couch potatoes. They were very apathetic. It's difficult to get them to do anything. When she measured the brain levels of fluoride, they were very high. Now, the people who claim that fluoride is not toxic to the brain had always contended, well, the blood-brain barrier, the special barrier system in the brain, keeps the fluoride out of the brain. Now, we have numerous studies that show that is a lie, that the brain levels are elevated. and they're high in the part of the brain we know controls behavior, called the amygdala, which is a nucleus. It's part of the limbic system. This controls your emotional behavior. Now, the second study that was even more shocking was done in which they compared giving animals fluoridated water of one part per million, and the other was giving them fluoridated water that was a half a part a million, in which you also added aluminum, small amount of aluminum. What they found was that when you fluoridated the water to levels equal to what's being put in our water system, that it did produce some destruction of brain cells in the part of the brain that have the most to do with memory and cognitive function. But when the fluoride was combined with the aluminum, it was infinitely more toxic, and the level in the brain of both the aluminum and the fluoride was infinitely higher, and they found widespread destruction of the cells in the hippocampus of the brain. Now, that's the part of the brain that is primarily destroyed in Alzheimer's disease. Now, this is so shocking because it's half the amount of fluoride that's being put in our water. Now, people need to realize that aluminum is added to city drinking water. It's added as a clarifying agent to remove the particulate matter. So we have this toxic brain mixture being added to our water system when you fluoridate it. So you have the exact same combination that was used in these animals, but at a much higher fluoride dose, twice the dose they used in this study. Now, another study has been done which found that when people develop dental fluorosis, that is a good way to measure what's going on in the brain. That if it's destroying the enamel of the teeth, it's also damaging brain cells. When they measured the amount of coenzyme Q10, which is a very important energy molecule in brain cells, they found that there was a significant reduction of brain coenzyme Q10 in animals fed fluoridated water, or given fluoridated water. They also found that the phospholipid content of the brain, which is a very important fatty substance of the brain, was reduced from 10 to 20% in animals drinking fluoridated water. So we not only have the behavioral studies that prove it's producing these terrible behavioral problems, but we also have positive evidence that proves it's destroying brain cells, it's reducing critical biochemicals in the brain, and it's doing so in parts of the brain that are related to all of our neurodegenerative diseases like Parkinson's and Alzheimer's disease and Lou Gehrig disease. So we have overwhelming evidence that the fluoridation of waters in community is extremely dangerous to the developing brain, but also to adult brains as well. This fluoride tends to accumulate in the brain, so that the longer you live in a fluoridated community, the more damage is being done and the higher the concentration of this toxic element appears in your brain. And as I said, it carries the aluminum into the brain in higher concentrations, and we have excellent evidence that aluminum plays a major and critical role in Alzheimer's disease. So this would be reason enough to stop putting fluoride in the water.
Well, now, does fluoride help to bring lead into the brain as well?
Well, what they discovered was that it doubles the amount of lead in the water.
Now, wait a minute, if it wouldn't double the amount of lead in the water, or would it?
Yes, because what they did a study in Canada, and they did a study at Dartmouth, and what they found was that in fluoridated communities, the amount of lead in the water doubles.
All right, in other words, that's because there's lead in the product that they're putting in the water.
No, it's because it leaches the lead out of the fixture.
Oh, I see, because there's lead in the solder and other things?
Well, yeah, in the fixtures. And I don't care if you bought one brand new, it still has lead in it, and it leaches the lead out of those fixtures and enters your water, and it's twice as high in fluoridated communities as non-fluoridated communities. They did a study in which they stopped the fluoridation program, and they found that the lead level in the children fell 50% once they got the fluoride out of the water.
Well, now, what is the toxic effect on children's brains from the lead? What does that do to the children's brains?
Now, lead is extremely toxic to the brain. It poisons numerous neurotransmitters. These are the chemicals that the brain uses to communicate, to make it work. It poisons numerous, for example, acetylcholine, dopamine, glutamate, all these are poisoned in the brain by very small doses of lead. It interacts with what we call calcium receptors in the brain. These are the things, also the special mechanism in brain cells that make them operate properly. So we're seeing rather profound effects, and it's beginning, the picture is beginning to explain why even very, very, very small levels of lead can produce profound effects on brain function. Now what they're saying is increased violence. We know that in children who have elevated lead levels, they're much more violent, they're difficult to deal with in schools, their behavioral problems, and their IQ is much lower. They have learning problems. This is because the lead lowers the serotonin level in the brain, which is kind of our natural brain tranquilizer. And we know that children who have elevated lead levels are three times more likely to have all these behavioral problems than kids with normal levels. So this is the major effect of the lead. It is poisoning the brain. It increases free radical generation in the brain cells. And every authority agrees that lead's extremely toxic. There's this enormous program now to try to get lead out of everything. Yet at the same time, they're putting fluoride in the water that doubles the amount of lead that the children are going to be absorbing.
And yet we have the scientific studies that show when you fluoridate the water, you double the lead that they're actually going to be imbibing or drinking.
Right, that's been proven. And two very large studies and several smaller studies have followed up. They find the same thing consistently. And in the study in which the fluoride was removed from the water and the lead levels fell in the children themselves.
Well, now, certainly we had some very good scientists working for the EPA who recognized certainly the danger of fluoride and tried to bring that out, and they were, everything was done to silence them and to totally ignore them. And they would come out with the reports, the bureaucrats would do exactly the opposite. How did they feel about, this lead problem as well as the problem inherent in fluoride? Were they aware of this?
Well, they're aware of it. I mean, it's well published. It's not a big secret. And these studies were, broadcast when they occurred, but we saw no change in the policy. And I think what we have is we have a force that is trying to push this fluoride program on communities at all costs, despite the fact all these studies are coming out demonstrating its cancer-causing potential, that it destroys the thyroid gland, that it interferes with fertility in males.
Now, they actually have lower sperm counts with that?
Well, they have lower testosterone levels, and they have decreased motility of their sperm.
Right, okay.
So these things have all been proven. We have all these studies, and yet they keep pushing this fluoride. And the thing about it is the very reason they're pushing the fluoride has been disproven because it does not reduce cavities. It actually increases cavities. In fact, dental fluorosis now is such a problem that there's an increase to 20 to 60% of dental fluorosis in fluoridated communities.
Well, now,
that
Chris,
is enormous.
I know we have the scientific studies by a gentleman named Frenny, who was created by the NIH to study comparable communities, one with fluoridated water, one not fluoridated water for fertility. And they found that there was a direct relationship between water fluoridation and fertility rates. The higher the fluoride, the lower the fertility. The lower the fluoride, the higher the fertility. And, of course, this is a very effective means of population control.
Exactly.
But and despite the fact that the NIH paid for this, they're still going along with this agenda. Why would they do something? Why would they poison our reproductive system? And what does it do to the children who are born? Is there a higher incidence of congenital malformation or childhood abnormalities as a result of the water fluoridation?
Well, there's also a study that indicates that there is an increase in Down syndrome in fluoridated communities.
Really?
We've got such an enormous amount of evidence here that fluoride produces tremendous damage, and at the same time we have enormous evidence from massive studies that shows that fluoride does not produce any reduction in cavities at all.
Well, now,
what can you do to go into a community and convince this community that you're there as a benevolent person trying to save little children from cavities when they know full well there's absolutely no evidence whatsoever it reduces cavities at all, but there is evidence that it may increase cavities?
Well, they, what they do is they come in with these pictures of children who have this baby a bottle syndrome where their teeth sort of decay just from getting all this sugar. And they show these pictures and they say, this is what happens to children's teeth when they don't have fluoridation. And you look at these pictures of the mouths of these little kids that the mother's been feeding them nothing but carbohydrates, and the teeth look like they're all rotting. And of course, they play on the emotions of the people. They use these pictures having nothing to do with water fluoridation. You could take pictures like that and say, this is what you see in areas where the water is fluoridated. It may very well have come from fluoridated areas. But really what they're doing is playing games with the minds of the people, and the tragedy is so many people just never bother to think. They act on emotions. Maybe they've had too much fluoridated water or aspartame or something like that.
Or a combination of all of these things. But people need to start thinking and realize that these people have a nefarious purpose for doing this, that the studies all point to the same thing, that it does not reduce cavities, it increases cavities, and it does enormous damage. It increases cancer, it does all these things to the brain, reduces hypothyroidism, you know, because fluoride accumulates at very high levels in the thyroid gland. So we have skeletal fluorosis, we've got dental fluorosis, we have infertility, we've got numerous health problems directly attributable to the level of fluoride they're putting in water. Plus, we have all these experimental evidence showing why it's doing it, how it's doing it, the total mechanism. They don't have a leg to stand on scientifically, so people's got to quit allowing this emotionalism and lies to cause them to commit suicide, because that's what they're doing. They're allowing these people to poison them on a grand scale.
And, of course, what about this fluoride attacking the thyroid? Does it actually produce a hypothyroidism or hyperthyroidism or thyroiditis? What does it do?
Well, it can produce both, actually. Some of the studies that were done in which they looked at different tissues measuring fluoride levels before and after people had lived in fluoridated communities found that the thyroid gland by far accumulated fluoride more than any other organ. They did not measure the brain at that time, but of organs outside of the brain, the thyroid was accumulating the highest levels. And they didn't count the bone in that either. We're talking just about organs. So of the organs of the body, the thyroid tends to collect a lot of fluoride. They looked at, you could either develop hyperthyroidism initially, because it tends to stimulate the thyroid. When you develop hyperthyroidism, frequently the thyroid burns itself out and you become hypothyroid. So it goes through this phase of first producing a hyperthyroidism and then a hypothyroidism. The connection also with mercury, now when you're getting the mercury in this, mercury produces autoimmunity. So one of the autoimmune diseases of thyroid is called Hashimoto's disease. So it can produce an aggravating effect when the two are combined. So the people need to look at combinations of these things as well. But, you know, I'm just shocked when I see parents telling me that their pediatrician told them they had fluoride tablets to their child's formula, or they're having these fluoride varnishes put on their children's teeth. I am absolutely appalled after having read and studied these scientific studies that are done on the brain-damaging effect of fluoride. It is just one of the worst scandals this country's ever been through, and I would absolutely warn people, do not let your children use fluoridated toothpaste, mouthwashes, fluoride varnishes, fluoride treatments by the dentist, and do not put fluoride pills in their milk. You're going to have to be very careful because, as I said, fluoride accumulates. The longer you live in a fluoridated community, the higher your brain level, bone level, and organ level of fluoride becomes. So if you start your child at birth taking fluoride tablets, and this is just something that's being done on a mass scale within the last 10 years. We're going to see the results of this 20 years from now. These children, they all have severe brain deficiencies at age 20 and 30.
Well, of course, the other thing is, of course, we get a lot of fluoride in a lot of our soft drinks, our Coke and Pepsi, and of course, they use it to spray the grapes, and so we get the fluoride from all sorts of things, don't we? In addition to the water.
Yeah, the problem that we're having is environmental accumulation.
Right. Well, let's
because
go to
of the fluoridated water, it's entering the plants, it's on everything you touch, and fluoride's so reactive, once it's on a plant, you can't wash it off.
Well, let's go to
very difficult to filter out of the water.
We've got Pure Heart. I haven't heard from you in a long time, Pure Heart. How are you?
Hi, Dr. Stan. I listen all the time, but I just have kids around.
Okay, fine.
I'd like to make a quick comment. Since I've been testing water for 20 years in this area just as part of a living, people in the local listening area might be curious. You know, Santa Cruz using surface waters, the fluoride levels there are usually less than 0.1. There's nothing in there to speak of. All the well waters in the county, like Watsonville and in the hills, our typical fluoride levels are between 0.1 to 0.4 part per million. And I got some waters from Berkeley and San Francisco before. Those are typically 1.0 on the nose, one part per million, because they already add fluoride at that level. I would think people should avoid toothpaste, fluoride, and aluminum cans together, things like that would be the best things to avoid. But
well, I discussed that in the book. This combination, because when you're drinking soft drinks that have fluoride in the water of the drink and an aluminum can, it's because it's so reactive, it's going to leach the aluminum out of the can, and you produce the fluoroaluminum compound that's so brain damaging.
But just in general, if people are on wells in the county, if the water is, if you can drink the water from the well, that would be tasting too salty and yucky to you, then typically the fluoride is okay. There are some super high fluoride associated with waters that are normally too salty to drink. So most people should not worry, but it can be tested for if they're concerned.
All right. Thank you so much, Pure Heart.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Bye. Okay, fine. Well, that's a gentleman who actually lives and tests the water here, so he knows what he's talking about. Well, we're just about out of time, Russell, and we're going to have to get you back because we're only at Chapter 2. We haven't even finished that, but this is such an important issue, and we will want to get you back to get through the rest of the book. What are your parting thoughts for our listeners tonight?
Well, I think what we've learned tonight is that you have to take charge of your own life. You have to do your own study. You cannot believe these people from the government. You cannot believe people who have vested interest in these things. We saw this in the vaccination. We saw it in the fluoridation, the mercury, the amalgam. We've become too trusting of authority. We need to start questioning things and start studying and thinking for ourselves for a change. Otherwise, you're going to pay a price that is going to involve your children, it's going to involve you, and it's going to involve some very, very serious diseases. So I would encourage people to pay attention, to learn these things, and protect yourselves.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you for being with us, and I'll call you, and we'll get you back on for another one of these marathons. But I do want our listeners to get all of the facts. God bless you.
Thank you, Sam. God bless you.
Bye-bye. Well, this has been Dr. Russell Blaylock, his book, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. And it's an excellent book, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. If you'd like more information, why, you can call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray that the people will understand what's really going on. And then, of course, please remember my ministry, Radio Liberty. Pray for our provision and our protection. And so until next, tomorrow at the same time when we'll be back with, no, we won't be back with you tomorrow because that's New Year's Eve, and we'll be back with you, I guess, Thursday evening. Until then, may the Lord be with you.
do you think? Where can I get the book? The store open?
We have to talk to the boss, but I think we still have some. I just ordered another dozen. We have them in there. I think we still have some. We've got them. They're shipping them, but you sold, I think, 8 of them or 9, and it sounds like you're going to sell another 3 or 4 tonight. No, that was a great interview.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to borrow mine, you can.
Yeah, we have. Why don't you borrow Stan's, though? And if you feel, you know, you...